Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
This may be my last podcast.
Again? I mean, what?
Yeah, I've decided to give up comics because I'm starting up a new restaurant that serves curry poured over French fries. I'm going to call it Curry on My Wayward Spud. And yes, there'll be peas when you are done.
No.
Okay. No. I guess, okay, fine. I'll keep buying comics.
I don't have a topic.
Well, let's start with, how was your Mother's Day?
I slept.
Well, we could have been podcasting and you were sleeping?
Yes.
Really, your dedication to this show is becoming most disturbing.
Well, what did you do on Mother's Day?
Well, I went and go saw my mother, of course.
Well, my mother's 500 and some miles away, so I wouldn't be able to drive down and be back the next that same day.
Excuse me. You know, if you can truly work from home, I don't think it matters where you are. You could just sit in your old childhood room and work for a while and then, you know, come home the following day.
Except, you know, the group home kind of schedule kind of
precludes. Well, you know, when you can honestly say, no, I can't pick up this extra 253 hours. I'm not in the state.
Actually, I have been tempted to do that, except for the fact that so many of my relatives are. I got my shot on Saturday. And I
now,
got
did
the
you do
one
the
shot
one fur or the two fur?
I got the one fur because that's what they offered me.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what I did.
I had to keep certain relatives from knowing that because, as one of them emailed me, you do know that if you get the vaccine, you're allowing demons into your body.
Oh, bloody hell.
Now, I just thought I was going to get, like, superpowers and a tracking chip so that Bill Gates could know where I was, which might be a problem because I hear his wife is going to be single soon and she's got a whole bunch of money. Wow. But
you
no,
could, you could find a way to cover.
But no, I just I got stranded at my job. That was my side effect.
Oatmeal again for dinner.
Yep, I came into the group home, and as I got there, I got a text saying, "Hey, is it okay if you work by yourself all day? And can you stay an extra hour and a half?" And it was one of those where it's, well, I really don't have much of a choice now that I'm here, do I? So that was the side effect I got. A 15-hour shift working by myself.
Which, judging by the way you're going, is probably fine.
Yeah, pretty much. So then I got home and watched a horror movie, staying up way too late. And then Sunday I would clean for a while and then nap for a while and then clean for a while and nap for a while and read some comics for a while and nap for a while. And, ooh, man, I love napping. Some wonderful, wonderful dreams during those naps as well. Those early New Gods drawn by Jack Kirby, and in the dream, Vince Coletta didn't ink them. That's why it's a dream, you know.
Yeah.
But how was your weekend?
Well, like I said, I work on Saturday. And then on Monday, I got up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head, found my way upstairs and had a smoke. No, I don't smoke. But Chris made this taco dip with cream cheese and stuff, which my parents love. And so we went over and hung out with them for a while, which was good. We were all vaccinated, so we didn't have to wear masks, which drives my sister nuts because she's like, I don't know if she lives in fear, but, you know, when I first went over to visit my dad during the beginning days of the pandemic, she's like, if you get my dad sick, and I'm like, really? Not my dad or anything, you know, just, and she still was making noise like that yesterday. Why are they all over? It's like, well, we got the shots. We're not contagious. And even if we get it, it's supposed to be just like a regular flu or cold, you know, we're not going to end up in the hospital. So I know my parents, they sold their place down in Florida. So that was, I'm kind of a mixed emotion of that because I did like going down there, but I don't think my brother or sister want it. And much as Chris and I would love to have a place we could go hide during the winter months, it just wasn't going to happen. So I was like, go ahead and sell the place and spend the money. It's one less thing I have to deal with when I take over as executor for the estate. What'd you do with the money? They spent it. Good for them. The one thing that was goofy, though, is they had a van down there that they wanted to bring back. So they stuffed it full of all the things they wanted versus the things they were leaving. And for the last couple months, I'm sorry, weeks, they've been waiting because some guy was like, yeah, we'll ship it. We'll throw it on a flat plate or whatever and drag it up on a truck for $900. And it was $1,200 and it was $1,600. And finally, my dad told him, you know what? I'm just going to come down and drive it home. Unless you guys go back to the original $900. And I told my dad, I said, forget it. I'll take some time off work and I'll go down and I'll drive it home. It's not a big deal. Hell, I might have even called you, Corey. I said, Corey, tell them to F off for a week and let's take a road trip home. All the places we can stop. Hey, there's a comic shop here. And I thought we'd never make it, though. We stop at every comic store. Like just today, someone posted online, there's a comic shop up in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, which is like maybe an hour away, you know, road trip. But I did figure if I had done that, I would be like, yeah, well, stop in Orlando, say hi to Turbo, and then stop, see my cousins in Tallahassee and Virginia and, or I'm sorry, Huntsville, Alabama. After that, it would be like, okay, which comic stops do I want to stop at on the way up?
Can you imagine if we drove back from Florida with Butch? What a great podcast that would be.
That would be epic. Not to mention, we'd probably be nonstop.
Yeah, we'd just figure out a way to broadcast the whole thing.
Yep, that would be cool. Oh, well. But they did finally say, no, it's on its way, and it should be here hopefully by the end of the week. And that was pretty much it. We just kind of hung out. It was a nice day. I mean, you know, the weather in Minnesota is schizophrenic. It was, what, 87? A weekend.
Yeah, it was, I think it was 87 on Saturday, and then a day later, frost warnings.
Yep. My wife and I had just gone to a plant sale, and we're like, honey, we better drag all those plants in we bought. So they're all protected. I bought me a mint plant just because I like to sniff it. Magnifique.
Well, I one story I want to point out, DC Comics has spent a few months studying something, and they found something amazing. Are you ready for the most shocking news you're going to get in comics for, like, the last 20 years?
I don't know. I had to live through Rob Liefeld not drawing feet. I suppose, let's hear it.
Last year's DC Comics firings impacted relations with comic stores. What? You mean firing the entire sales staff and most of the people who worked in the collected editions area and had literally decades of experience working with comic shops have affected their sales? You're kidding.
I am utterly, utterly shocked. Who? The question I have is, and you can bleep this out, who is the brain dead or that thought it'd be a good idea to fire all these people?
More importantly, AT&T.
Who is the second mother or that ended up saying, well, let's study why our sales are and our relations are in the crapper.
Well, it was AT&T looking at
DC sales went down
over the last year.
I want the name.
Oh, they're never going to tell us that.
Well, sometimes they give you names. You can find the stupid, I'm the one who canceled Star Trek. But, no, you know, you really need to find these guys and say, you know what? You don't know your freaking job. We got two idiots doing this podcast. They're going to run DC Comics. Well, no, I'd leave Jim Lee in. I think he's doing a good job. But, you know, we can be the executives. Why isn't there ever a benign executive, you know, that, you know, I'm not coming in here to cut costs and take names and chew bubblegum. No, I understand what I'm doing, and I want to actually grow this business and start making some money.
You mean like Disney did with Star Wars and the Muppets and Marvel?
Yeah. Nope. That's not the way. Yeah.
That was the one thing. Everybody was scared to death when Disney bought Marvel. Oh, they're going to make it kid friendly and they're going to do this and they're going to do that and they're going to ruin it. And I remember when they bought the Muppets, everybody was mad that they were going to, quote, Disneyfy the Muppets. And what they did,
they were kind of Disneyfied anyways. I mean,
yeah, Disney actually gave them a solid platform rather than they had to run around and try to seek out media deals. And now, you know, Disney, they own media platforms. So the only problem the Muppets have is when they do a new series, it just kind of tanks. Yeah. But over at DC, the thing that really
I should mention that when DC bought Marvel, I was like, that is brilliant.
I agree.
Same thing when they bought Star Wars and the Muppets. I was like, just. But, you know, we're geeks. We have faith. We know what the properties are that were being bought. Now, you were saying meanwhile over at DC.
But the other thing about Disney and Marvel and all that, we knew people at Marvel who said the Disney people came in and said, we're not going to change anything you do. You guys are doing great. That's why we bought you.
Yeah.
And Disney has not touched Marvel's publishing at all. Other than, oh, now that we bought Fox, here's the Aliens. Here's Predator. Here's all these other Disney properties. We're going to put your trade paperbacks and stuff in Disney stores, which we don't know how sales are on that because Disney never reports it.
Although they are closing.
They never break it out.
At the Mall of America. It might be too late to get discount stuff there, but they are closing the retail store there, which I always found surprising.
Well, Mall of America just strikes me as, I don't know if any of the stores there can actually make a profit with the rate. I think it's almost like they're there to say they're there.
Yeah. Well, the big part of what the Mall of America was is it was more of a draw for tourists.
Yeah.
I mean, the locals, we came, we saw, we yawned, but, and they really took out a lot of the unique stores that made it interesting. I think the only thing left, I think there's a Prince store, which is pretty good. They took the one out, I think, at the airport because that was just a limited time. So that's actually a good idea. But I was surprised to hear that. Well, I guess maybe not. I mean, I was surprised that the Disney store was still there. I thought it had moved out.
I thought Disney stores were gone like the Warner Brothers stores were gone.
Yeah. No, apparently it was there. It might have downsized. No, nothing Time Warner does surprises me anymore because I'm on a Babylon 5 list, you know, and I remember a number of years ago, people were like, what do we want a property like Star Trek? What do we have? And we're like, you have Babylon 5. But what they did is they so totally pissed off Straczynski, the creator of Babylon 5. And when the creator, I'm not talking like Gene Roddenberry creator, I'm talking like, no, the entire universe is pretty much inside his head. When Babylon 5 was written, he pretty much did something that no one else had ever done. He made science fiction under budget, and he wrote it with a beginning, a middle, and end. Not like Star Trek or all the other ones are just like comic books. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it'll end, but it's going to continue somewhere. And eventually, the relationship between Straczynski and Time Warner just soured. I think it was back when, let's see if I can remember the timeline. So the original syndicated company went bankrupt or disintegrated. So Straczynski had to squeeze his five-year plan into a four-year plan, which is why when you watch season four of Babylon 5, it's like, wow, they wrapped one of the major storylines up real fast. Then towards the end, TNT stepped in and said, no, we like this. We want you to do a couple movies and we'll give you the season five. So I said, okay, I wrapped it up. You got the end of season five. And TNT's like, oh, we want you to do another season. And he's like, well, I don't have anything. Well, how about a new show? Okay, so he came out with Crusades. Then TNT decided they didn't want it. Because if you recall, what was the other big show TNT had on at the time?
Nitro?
No, that was before Nitro. They were still sucking with ECW. But what they found out is that the people who watched ECW and the people who watched...
ECW was never on TNT.
Well, that was something wrestling related. Maybe it was Thunder. All I know is that whoever watched Thunder didn't stick around to watch Babylon 5, and the people watching Babylon 5 didn't watch Thunder. So they were like, okay, we got two different audiences, and that's not what they wanted. So once again, the nameless executives stepped in and started mucking around with things. And he just kind of, okay, that's it. And there were a couple other attempts, really, really badly underfunded show called Legends of the Rangers. And even now, it's kind of like the Star Wars Holiday Special of Babylon 5. You know, people like, I'll watch it just because it's got one of the cooler actors on it. But the rest of it's, I have never watched it, but apparently one of the way they controlled the ship was kung fu moves. So, but you listen to people talk online, and mostly fans, because I'm like, we should reboot it. And they're like, no, there's much more that can be told, because it is an entire universe of characters and peoples and situations. Well, maybe Straczynski will come back. No, he's making money doing screenplays. He doesn't need the hassle of working with networks anymore or comic companies.
Oh, he's working with the comic company.
When you start talking to DC and it's like, yeah, nameless executive.
Well, here's the thing that really blew up in their face, according to people at DC. Now, Joe, you and I are too old for Fortnite.
Yes.
Fortnite is a video game that the young people are into.
I see the toys hanging at Target, and I just walk on by.
It's an online battle royale game, and I real early on in console gamings tried to do online gaming with people, and I got really tired of 12-year-olds telling me I was gay.
Yep. You know, it's funny because my daughter's boyfriend, I listen to him play upstairs, and it's like at 3 in the morning, I'm like, blankety, blankety, blank. And yeah. That's my daughter talking. You know, it's like... Oh.
But they had a Batman Fortnite crossover. The comic book was underordered by retailers despite being made fully returnable. They delayed the final order cutoff because they said, hey, this is going to be big. And DC overprinted retail orders by 100%, still sold out immediately. Why? Because there was no one going to the retailers like they used to go to you. And saying, hey, this book is going to be big because it's being pushed in a place you don't know anything about. It was being pushed in the Fortnite game. It had a code for a special item or skin or something in Fortnite. And the Fortnite players, much like when the original Magic comics came out and they had cards in them, I remember at the beginning, oh, everybody had to have them for that special card, and that wore off pretty quick. But with this, it was there's a code in the comic for the game, and the Fortnite players went nuts for it. Comic shops had no idea this was going on because DC, you know, despite all this, nobody at DC was on a sales force to let comic shops know, hey, this is going to be huge. Now, Joe, when you owned your shop, was there ever a time that the salespeople at either Marvel or DC or even with Diamond would contact you? I know you've talked about they said, well, we think your orders are a little high when you started your new shop. Did they ever contact you to say, this book's going to be much bigger than everybody thinks?
Not really. At the moment, the only time I remember we had a guy, his name was Tim, and he was a holdover from Cap City. And what would happen is I think the people who had the majority of the Cap City accounts were visited by a personal Diamond rep. And his job was to, like, he'd be in the Midwest and he would drive around to the various comic shops and he would sit and talk issues. That's the famous story where he came in the one day and I sat him down and I gave him a bottle of our beloved Rat Bastard Root Beer. And I'm saying, I am having a Rat Bastard day. I didn't get anything past the letter D. And what do you mean? I said, no titles ship beyond letter D. I wasn't billed for them. You just didn't ship them. And well, most of the time, his visits were pretty good. He would sit down, and he always had a list of things he was pushing. And sometimes it was like an extra discount. If you extra 15 copies, you get this, you get that. I would usually sit him down, and I would take the list from him, and I would run around the store, especially if it happened to be a graphic novel. And I would check off, I order me this, order me that. Oh, if I order two, I get an extra 5% off. Okay, order me two. So it was kind of a personalized thing. He would point out things coming up, whether or not I ordered them. Games weren't that big a deal. I mean, he kind of understood the informal dynamics I had with Nick over at the source. You know, I carried comics and toys. I mean, I carried Pokemon, Magic, you know, whatever. We delved into WWE cards, whatever. Games were more the source, and the source carried comics and games, and toys were more on my side of the block. In fact, Nick used to tell me that one thing Diamond loved about my account was that I ordered toys because they really were trying to push the toys hard. And they still to this day do because they have that old Diamond Select line. But I, you know, it was a big thing for me. I sold new toys like crazy, so I'd always order it. That kind of went away because I asked him about that because I said, you know, you actually got a pretty decent job. I think when I told him I was selling the shop, I said, I'll come work your job. He goes, well, Diamond doesn't have a lot of reps. So we're kind of factored in with the old Cap accounts. And as time goes on, we get phased out. And I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. But it was also very nice to actually have a guy who you knew would come by every couple months just to see how you were doing. You didn't have to count on the internal dialogue or the magazines or the weekly sheet they would give saying, here are the things you should order in advanced comics. I think we see that in Diamond every so often when it says this item may have been advanced solicited. That's the weekly sheets that the retailers get saying, this is something available for order now. It will be in the next previews, but we need to get the orders done now. And of course, we talked in the past about the liquidation list, which we absolutely loved. That'd be my Monday night thing. I'd download it, get my orders in right away, and get some really cool stuff in the mail. But that's something that has gone by the wayside. I don't recall as Crazy Comics if I had a personal rep that I could call, and even had one with my Diamond account, but they rarely called me, and it got to the point where it wasn't even if I needed, like, okay, I need to order Batman Fortnite book, bump up another 20 copies because I was paying attention. I could call him direct. Most of the time, it was just email. Just email him, hey, I need this. I'm missing this, blah, blah, blah. Unless, of course, I happen to have a day where I'm missing everything past the letter D.
The other thing that DC has announced that they're doing, because sales have kind of dropped a lot.
I'm shocked.
should make you happy. They are taking the DC Direct, that is a digital download that you do not download, and they're going to have a print version of it.
It's about fucking time. Now, the question is it going to be like that aborted poster they were giving out? Like, here's a list of everything.
No,
we got.
It'll be.
Well, that doesn't tell me.
It will be the DC Direct that's available as a download. There'll also be a print version. No idea if it's going to cost anything, because with Marvel's, it's 99 cents unless you buy previews. Although I imagine that is going to change, and we will get to that. But that is basically, it's going to be coming out starting in July, I believe they said. And I think that is probably one of the smarter things they've done in the last year, because with DC being with Lunar and Lunar having a lot of NDAs, we don't know how well DC is selling, other than the fact that we hear, like, they printed twice as many Batman Fortnites as people ordered, and they still sold out immediately. We're not hearing about huge sales successes, because if there were huge sales successes, DC would be issuing press releases here, there, and everywhere. Because that's what you do when you have a big success. And I think a lot of it is for it's people like you who, yeah, if I download it, it's not when I'm at the comic shop. It's not like previews where I could go through and checkmark things. I think comic fans and digital sales show this are far more needed on paper than other people who order things.
I'm always suspect when people are like, oh, digital sales are this and that, because I don't buy it. Considering so much of the country doesn't have high-speed access internet, so many places in the country don't even have access to an actual comic book store. And judging by what we've heard from some of the local guys, Diamond really makes you jump through way, way too many hoops to even get a comic account set up. And I can understand they got to protect themselves, but, you know, as we talked in podcasts past, I want to get a Coke machine. I just call Coke and they're like, okay, just order this much a month. We'll have the machine there. You know, for Diamond, well, we need the firstborn, a copy of your DNA, your credit references, your reference to their references, references showing their references. You need to have $100,000 cash by morning, and maybe we'll let you think about ordering from us. You know, again, they're trying to keep, you know, they kind of swung both ends of the pendulum. You know, when I was getting out of it around 2001, one of the big things, they were worried about buyer clubs. And we actually thought about that briefly, where I thought, well, geez, between you, Big Mike, Little Mike Gruber, myself, and a few other select people, we could order enough to make the minimums and just have it show up and we'll split it up in my garage. And Diamond really didn't want that. And internet stores were starting to sprout up, and they made it so, I forget what it was, like $500 to open up a comic store. And that's across everything. I mean, look at the previews. My comic order alone wholesale is probably $500 a month. You know, you can buy me and Corey piece of cake. However, to do internet, it was like, well, okay, you got a $5,000 retail a month. Because, you know, they knew, first of all, you're not getting the overhead. And I don't think people really understood how that worked. Now it's like, I don't know how a local comic store can survive, considering you can pretty much buy at almost half price from online retailers, assuming they ship, and assuming they carry DC, and assuming they carry Marvel, and assuming they carry, well, all sorts of stuff.
And assuming they care.
Yeah, there is that. There's like a, and I lost it because I was going to put it in my freaking, but there's a comic company that one of the guys from the source was touting on his Facebook page saying, you have to come in this Wednesday and buy the comic. This is the only day you can buy it. You can't buy it any other day.
I saw that, and that was extremely weird.
Yeah, I can understand it's kind of fun and exciting, but it's also stupid because I was like, I can't come in on Wednesday. There's no way I can do it. And Chad's like, well, you could give me a credit card. I was like, for a $1 comic? I said, how are you guys aren't even going to make any money on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's a fun idea. It's kind of interesting, but it's also too clubby and it's too exclusive. I mean, does anybody even hear about that comic book company that was being distributed through Walmart exclusively?
Last time I went to a Walmart, they didn't have it. They didn't have the box set up anymore. And the guy running it had said, the third issue of each book is out. And I went and there was nothing there. And, you know, the cardboard setup was gone. And the comics that they had did not impress me enough that I would bother looking for it.
Yeah, it's actually the ones I went to, they moved it back where the magazines were, not up front. The comics that are up front, the comics that are up front are usually now the packaged ones that, and Marvel still has like an exclusive variant cover with every pack, but the DC ones are gone. I think DC you can buy like 8 for $10. You don't have any idea what's in them, but there's no variant cover. The Marvels are still like 4 for $8-$9, but the key is you getting that variant Walmart cover, which may or may not go up in price depending on how long you sit on it before you try blowing it out. But yeah, I've been in and I look for that third issue, but that just, it doesn't seem like a very sustainable business plan, you know, either of these. Then again, there's a lot of people doing it on Kickstarter, so maybe that's the wave of the future. I don't know.
The digital stuff, from what I hear, single copies and things like that sell about between 10 and 20% of what comics sell overall. The big money is in the Marvel Unlimited, the DC Universe, and Comixology's got kind of their weird all-you-can-eat that I'm not signing up for because what's on it changes month to month. And for a lot of them, it's like you get to read the first trade worth of books free. And it's, well, if I'm paying for an all-you-can-eat plan, I want to read the whole story, not just, oh, here's the first trade. You want the rest? I'll be $20 each. So another thing that's going on with comic sales. You didn't think I had a whole bunch of this, did you? People from Diamond are calling comic shops to ask if they will continue to buy their comics through Diamond, their Marvel comics through Diamond. Meanwhile, Penguin Random House is adding comic sales reps. That's their job, is to sell the Marvel comics to comic shops and to shops that may be amenable to carrying monthly or trade paperbacks as well as regular books. Do you think, Joe, let's say you're a shop and you're going to get 50% off all your Marvel across the board. If you jump through some hoops, you'll get more and no shipping. Or will you continue to order through Diamond, not knowing exactly how much your discount will be, but it's not going to be 50% paying your shipping?
Well, I would probably move to move to Penguin. The question being is, how are they going to format this? Right now, the biggest bone of contention I would have as a retailer with Marvel and DC are variant covers, because there's way too many of them. They're way too trippy to try to get. If I have to jump through as many hoops with Diamond, if I had to do that with Penguin, it just wouldn't, I don't know. To me, it's just, again, you're increasing the amount of work. Tangible benefits would be, obviously, the shipping would go down and disappear. Would I be able to buy returnable? That's a big question, because that was always the big thing when, towards the end of Hot Comics, that I was trying to do was to get a book account set up so that I could return things, you know, order 20 copies of it, let it sit, and then return it. I never did. I mean, we got, I think the most we did, we just ordered onesie twosies, which we would sit on and never return anyways, because we just, it was too much work, you know. But what I had to do with Diamond superseded everything versus, oh yeah, let's take a look at Penguin and that. I mean, you helped me out a lot. I mean, look at the returnables I had with Krauss Publishing. It's like, okay, once every 3 months, rip the covers off, send them back for credit. You know, they wanted it done every month, but I was like, no, I'll just let it sit until they're overwhelming. As a big store, I would probably be amenable to that. Even as a shop like, say, our buddy down in Mind's Eye, he carries more books, so that might be better for him, especially if he can tap into books. Where would he put it, though? Again, as Crazy Comics, if you have a small shop, where would you put this stuff? I carried the Marvel trades, or I guess, trade paperback, paperback books, you know, because they were still paperback book size, and there was a different publisher coming out. I ordered onesie twosies, and I'd pick them up at different distributors and put them on a tiny book rack. And they wouldn't sell like a graphic novel would, but they would definitely sell. So, yeah, there's still a lot of questions. I mean, I would probably go with Penguin just for the reason you said. It's like, you know, my Diamond discount's already crap. So I might as well, you know, in DC, I can't. What is DC's discount anyways? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know either, because it's not available to us. What's a nice way to put it? Civilians.
Well, that's okay. We got some retailer friends. We'll just give them a call, and maybe we'll have some answers on our next podcast.
The other thing that Diamond has said is they are looking into not charging shipping. Gosh, competition might have changed something. Who knew?
Yeah.
That shipping for that always, it was weird, because when I worked at Schindler's, you know, we got stuff from book companies, from magazine companies, from all this. They never charged shipping. Shipping was always something that they had to deal with, that the, you know, basically you're going to pay shipping no matter what, but it came out of their profit. So they would drop your discount just a little bit and everything. And it made it easier for shops, because they knew if they ordered something, you know, if I order something and I'm ordering five and they're $2 each, I know I'm going to pay $10. Whereas with Diamond, okay, I've ordered five and they're $2 each and it's going to be $10 plus whatever they charge me for shipping that week. Which cannot be almost good for your profit line.
This reminds me almost like the beginning of the distributor wars in the 90s, because we went from you know, having no shipping by picking them up at Cap to now we got three distributors and we got three times the shipping and three times the headache. And, you know, that's why I kind of collect. Being that the comic direct market seems to be, I just don't know. DC seemed to abandon it. Now they're kind of like, oh, you know, I think they just took it for granted that, well, DC's DC, they'll always order from us. And guess what? They didn't, especially when you pull that future state crap. And, you know, Marvel at least seems to be paying attention a little bit to the direct market, even though they're developing other markets to go along with the direct market. And everybody else is just being pulled along because they got Image got nothing else. They got what they got, and that's all they got.
Image has gotten really lucky. And you get lucky by working for a long time. Because I would imagine that Image made enormous amounts of money off the Walking Dead trade paperbacks in bookstores and Amazon and everything, and having the different formats. We have, you know, the $20 book. We have the hardcover. We've got, you know, the hardcover that would reprint a year's worth, you know, 12 issues. The compendium, which would have 48, which is basically 4 years worth, and on and on and on. And now, Invincible, I looked at the sales charts, and the Invincible Compendium number one is number three when it comes to graphic novel sales. And that's not a cheap book. That's a $70 book, because it's, you know, the same size as the Walking Dead compendiums, but it's color, which costs more. So the Walking Dead compendiums were $50 each. The Invincible compendium is $70 each. So Image has got that money rolling in. And now they've got the first of the big Mark Miller series, that Jupiter's Legacy. That just started on Netflix. So, you know, that trade paperback is going to be selling. So Image, through tons of work, has gotten very lucky with their media tie-in stuff, making them lots of money. Whereas we keep hearing about how Marvel and DC, oh, their movies do great, but it rarely spills over into the comics, except Vision and Scarlet Witch. They sold so many books that Marvel ran out of them.
Now that I'm shocked about.
And the Captain America stuff is selling so well that they're going back to press on all of the omnibuses. That's one of the things that has really surprised me over the last year. Marvel is getting very aggressive on reprinting their omnibuses, to the point you and I have talked about it with the previews thing. There are usually 6-7 omnibuses every month.
Yeah.
With 2 or 3 new ones, and then up to 4 reprints.
My poor shelves.
Now, when I go to comic shops, I don't see very many of them. And it's kind of surprising to me that, you know, we're in a couple of groups where people are, you know, collect these like they're going out of style.
And boy, are they whiny. Holy
yes,
moly.
They are.
Anyway, different subject. Well, I think okay. The only place one in town that actually carries omnibuses in the Twin Cities, Tim over at Comic College has a lot of them.
Yep.
And, of course, our good buddy Steve Brown will find the ones that are being discounted, and he has them down there. And that's becoming less and less as Marvel gets control out of their omnibus inventory.
And also, they are getting out of the idea of, oh, we got to dump these. They've been sitting in the warehouse too long. It's more now where it's like, okay, we've sold out. We need to get these back into print, because it used to be once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that too. You know, this one might be like the upcoming Kirby Romance one. Can't see that one ever being published again. In a licensed crossover, there was just a Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one that came out. Anytime you've got two properties involved, trying to get a reprint is almost impossible. So again, if you're talking, I'm buying these as an investment, and I know early on we talked about that, you know, yeah, buying an omnibus, they usually go up in price, but somebody noticed, and they're like, hey, if there's a demand, let's fill it.
And there's been a change in how Marvel does things as well, because I remember, and after the bankruptcy, Marvel started up the Masterworks again and said, we're going to keep these in print because this is how people will get the early books. And then slowly they would sell out, and it got to be where it's, they need to reprint like 5 or 6 of the Spider-Man ones and 4 or 5 of the X-Men ones. And they were even doing soft covers of omnibuses for a while. I was amazed they did soft cover, not omnibuses, the Masterworks. They did soft covers of some of the Golden Age stuff. But then they said, nope, we're not reprinting the Masterworks anymore. They will be the collector's books. And the Epic line will be where we have the older stuff that's in print for all time. But people didn't pay attention to that. So some of the Epic books, when they go out of print, the prices go insane.
For the moment.
And Marvel isn't real good about keeping them in print either, because somebody was asking about, oh, I want to get the Ditko Spider-Man. Well, all the Ditko Spider-Man epics are out of print. They've been out of print for a while, so they're going for $200-$300 each. But Marvel is aggressively trying to keep those in print. I think the problem is they're selling out of this stuff much faster than they thought they would.
Yeah, I can see that, because they probably, you know, have a budget forecast to print this. It should last this long. It's not, which is good because they're making money, but it takes time to get things going and to get time at the printer and solicit. I don't think they blind, maybe they do. I don't think they blind publish, like, okay, all the Ditko Spider-Mans are out of print. Let's just publish them up. I think they're more like, okay, let's get some pre-orders going, and we'll go from there.
And they do try to print stuff up pre-movie. You know, they did the Eternals omnibus, the expanded omnibus, because this is when the movie's coming out, but then the movie got delayed. They had all the Black Widow stuff, you know, the Black Widow omnibus, and then a couple, I think at least one Black Widow epic. And then that movie got delayed.
Not to mention all the toys, which are long gone.
Next spring, they're going to be dumping a lot of Doctor Strange omnibuses and books on the market. They're going to reprint the Doctor Strange Volume 1. They're going to do Doctor Strange Volume 2, which reprints everything after Ditko up until the book got canceled. Yes, Doctor Strange got canceled by the end of the 60s. Didn't sell very well. They pretty much will have all of the Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme, the 90s series. That's all going to be out in omnibuses. And with the new Spider-Man movie coming, they're announcing Spider-Man omnibuses coming out. So a lot of it is tied to the movies. And we can be pretty thankful for that, because there's no way they would have done an Eternals omnibus if there wasn't going to be a movie. There was no way they wouldn't do those two Inhumans masterworks if there wasn't going to be a movie. Because let's face it, the Inhuman series never sold ever, anywhere, ever, 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 no matter how hard they tried. Even in the 60s, he started an Inhuman series as kind of a way to, here, let's give this to Jack Kirby so he can write it. And then Jack left anyway. So it's, we'll have Roy Thomas and Neil Adams do it, because we saw the sales on the X-Men went up too late when they did that. But then it didn't sell. So Roy Thomas and Neil Adams couldn't get an Inhumans book to sell. And then they did another Inhumans book in the mid-70s. George Perez, yeah, didn't sell. There's some books that just nobody cared about, and the Inhumans is one of them. Now, last week, Joe, in my geeking, I talked about a company that publishes public domain stuff called Gawanda Land.
Are you Gawanda? Talk about it again.
Yes, because I emailed the owner and Ooh. Said, hey, we're going to be talking about you on our podcast in the next week. And I was wondering where the name of the company comes from. And I also said that, you know, because we're going to plug, can you give some freebies to our listeners? Can you? So, he said the name is a bastardization of the ancient landmass of 200 million years ago, Gawanda Land.
Gawanda.
We played with it a little bit because I wanted something that when put into the Amazon search engine would only bring up our books.
Excellent so idea.
It's G-A, and I'm mispronouncing it. I'm telling you that right now. It's G-W-A-N-D-A-N-A-L-A-N-D, Gwandaland. So, Joe, right now, go to the Google and type, not the Google, the Amazon, and type that in, and you'll see, oh, there's all the stuff. He's right. It's the only stuff that comes up. G-W-A-N-D-A-N-A-L-A-N-D.
Yep. First thing, even on Google, Gwandaland comic from Amazon.
Yep.
Leave it to Beaver Comics.
It's the best decision I ever made once people figure out how to spell it. As far as where they should
Toby
go.
Toby Gillis. Oh, sweet.
Yeah, this his the company's motto is that they respect copyright, but they are also aggressive if you have not renewed that copyright.
Yeah. Moon Girl. Bonanza, Tippy Teen. Some of these I remember having as like one shots when I dig through quarter books and stuff, or, you know, dollar books at the various sales. Never in decent shape, but to have them like this and in a nice format where you can read it and not worry about ripping the page.
So the first stop should be FOG. Fans of Gwandaland Comics on Facebook, because you get a better perspective by hearing comments and posts from readers, as well as his announcements as to what is going to press. He has links to Amazon and also to where you can buy them directly. You'll save 20% off Amazon if you buy them directly from him. We do have a website in construction, but it's coming along slowly. But if you want the guidebooks, which are kind of catalogs that are basically, here's the kind of stuff we publish, and here's about 300 pages of comics that we've printed, you could get the first three by emailing Gwandaland, G-W-A-N-D-A-N-A-L-A-N-D, at yahoo.com. They do have a website at gwandaland.com, but there's not a whole lot there. He says it's coming along slowly. The site is under construction, which makes, you know, for a guy who's publishing old comics, that's great, because that's the how websites were in the 90s. They'd have the little guy with the shovel, under construction. But it does have their website and the Facebook link and the shop, where you can send an email, join a shopping list. But if you email him and say that you were sent my crazy comics and stories, he'll send you a list and those three guidebooks as PDFs. And maybe one or two other little freebies. You could get a whole bunch of free comics that you can read on your computer or your tablet. They are sent as PDFs, so you can read them on any device. And I wanted to give them a plug because he was so nice to explain where the name came from. And also, I've noticed that every 2-3 weeks, I will order something from them. Or I will see something and put it on my list of stuff to order directly from him. Because it's not just he goes out and grabs the PDF file from, you know, Comic Book Plus or anything like that. No, they hunt down. They hunt down scans, they hunt down versions, and they clean them up, make them look as good as they can. They put some other information in the book. It's a really nice package. And he will gather up the stories. So I think I mentioned last week they had Lady Satan. He gathered all the Lady Satan stories, which was one of those features that bounced around from comic to comic in the 40s, got them all together in one book. And he does that for a number of characters. Another thing they're doing is they're reprinting the Skywall.
Hey, my request to join FOG, fans of Gwandaland Comics, has been approved. See how fast that happened? We're talking the Facebook page. Sorry, I got excited. I shouldn't interrupt you.
Now, Joe, have I ever told you about the Skywall stuff that was published in the 70s? I think I've talked about it from time to time.
Probably.
In the 70s, black and white horror comics became huge because Warren had a surge of interest. Their sales went up. Marvel got into publishing stuff. So 50s crap publisher Myron Fass had Sol Brodsky, who was an office worker at Timely, Atlas, and Marvel, put out their own line of really crappy horror black and white comics, a lot of which were reprints from the 50s, where they just kind of went in and on the original art, they drew in more blood and gore. But they're all public domain. So if you want a complete run of Psycho, you can buy it from them. Or Nightmare, or I forget what the other one was. I think it's Devilina. I don't know. But I wanted to point them out because I'm enjoying their stuff. And he was Lance. I want to get his name right. Lance Jones was nice enough to answer my question and send along freebies and say, if you email me, I'll send the listeners some freebies. You know who else is really nice to us, Joe?
Our sponsors?
Why, yes!
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks.
And I did announce on the Facebook that now that my schedule has loosened up at the group home, I'm going to be returning to some of the secondary podcasts I do, including I am starting to set up some interviews for June. So Solitaire Rose Radio, where I do interviews, is coming back. Maybe I could twist Joe's arm and we can get back to doing our Master of Kung Fu commentary series. And I still am trying to get Dangerous Dan Moore to fire back up with the here's all the other podcasts I do.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where he gives a complete rundown of all of the Valiant books before Unity.
Which aren't as many as you'd think.
No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
I hit 3,000 or 6,000 feedbacks.
Ew.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually more, because for a while there, you couldn't have, if you gave me two feedbacks, only one would count, but they changed that policy. And then, of course, there's a number of people who, for some reason, don't like me and give me neutrals, or they give me negatives. But I just thought I had a couple positive customer service things happen on eBay. You know, every so often I'll talk about the negative stuff, and you know, you tend to remember the negative things. I mean, I haven't been working at Sears for over 40 years. I still remember the people I had negative reactions with, just because they pissed me off. But in this case, it was kind of one of those things where you spend a little extra time, and it made a sale. I had somebody contact me, and he was looking at a Totally Hulk. I think it was Total Absolute Hulk, fabulous. Oh, Totally Awesome Hulk. It's the one that Frank Cho started, that had what's that guy? The alleged third smartest guy in the Marvel Universe. You know, he decided to be a Hulk for a while.
Amadeus Cho.
Yeah, Cho. Well, no wonder Cho wrote it. Anyways, he looked at the listing and he said, "You have Savage Hulk 1-4 listed. Which is it?" And I thought, okay, I'll take a look, because I did have both at one time. And occasionally it happens where, you know, you put up 200-300 auctions and they mess up the template. You miss the picture or you miss the description. And I looked and I had sold the Savage Hulk, and I still had the Totally Awesome Hulk. And I said, "Nope, it's Totally Awesome. I'll put up a picture." He said, "Well, if you can just send me a quick picture." And I did. And he bought it on the spot. Got him a good deal, too. Another customer sent me a note. We've talked in the past about Dynamite, Banana magazines. They were the Scholastic magazines. A lot of people want to know what the posters are that are inside there. I think one thing I might do when I list magazines is actually take a picture of the table of contents, just so people can see what's in there. But not all the time do they list what the posters are. And somebody contacted me about a Bananas issue and asked what was the poster. And I looked at it. It was like a mountainside poster, you know, nighttime looking up in the mountains, starry sky. And he goes, "Oh, I thought it might have had a Kiss poster." And I go, "Well, let me take a look inside, because in the centerfolds of these magazines, sometimes they have a mini poster. The regular poster is one that, you know, you rip out and you can hang on the wall and stuff. And then the mini poster, yeah, I suppose you could take it out of the magazine." And sure enough, it had a Kiss mini poster in there. And I took a couple pictures, sent them back. He bought the magazine. Another guy ended up buying, and I'm trying to find the issues because I'm not sure what it is, but it was the fourth Tarzan that Joel Kubert did when DC took it over. They kept the regular numbers. I think it was 210, maybe?
They started with, I can actually get that number real quick for you. Yeah,
and I'm looking at my list to see what it was. Dun, 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 dun.
Who will get it first?
But who will get there first? But then the comic washed ashore. Corey was there to save the day.
Go.
Don't want to do any more. I mean, there's not a 30-second rule, but, you know, I don't need to. Sid Marty Croft pissed at us.
Tarzan 207 was the first DC issue.
Okay, so you go forward. It would be 211. And I had what I did is when I looked at the listing, I noticed I had 215 pictured. And I said, well, I don't want to send it till I know which one you want. This is the one that was listed, and the one that was pictured was wrong. And so he came and he said, you know what? I need both of them. How much for the other one? So I lowered the price. He bought them both. So sometimes just a little bit of customer service can make your eBay sales go a little quicker, you know, and I try to get it in a timely manner. Sometimes you don't need it at all. Corey, do you remember Femforce at all?
Yes, that was through AmeriComics.
Yep.
Bill Black's company. It's allegedly
still being published, but I haven't seen an issue around.
I know it's still being published because Will Mineo does pinups for them, and he'll post those pinups online. I've never bought any AmeriComics because I remember early on in the early 80s, they had these beautiful Paul Galassi covers, and I picked up an issue, and the interiors were just so amateurish that I felt like I'd been ripped off. And I know that it's gotten better, and there are fans of it, but I remember in the early days, the joke we had at the comic shop I hung out was, you know, you'd have these beautiful Paul Galassi covers, and then the interiors would be, you know, look like somebody in high school drew it. And we go, well, obviously, Bill Black is holding Paul Galassi's family hostage to make him draw covers for these books. We were terrible people.
We were. But in 1996, I wasn't, because Femforce was counting down to 100. And as I'm digging through my boxes of stuff, I found a bunch of sundry items, buttons, stickers, pinbacks, things like that. I had a couple of these Femforce buttons, put them up on the eBays at what I thought was a fair price. They sold right away. And you're thinking, maybe I should have jumped the price. But that's not the way Cray works. I sold a copy of a book called Major Damage Number 1, signed by C.E. Sutherland. This was done way back in 1994. Major Victor Bravo, a.k.a. Major Damage, an overbuffed, overstuffed jarhead, heads into space to make first contact with a race of extraterrestrials. But when it turns out that the aliens are under the command of a green-skinned madwoman in traditional sci-fi metallic lingerie, bent on conquering the solar system, of course, Major Damage has his hands more than full in this over-the-top indie title. There were only two of them, so don't worry about it. At least I think there were. I haven't seen any number two. For some reason, I had a number one that was actually signed by the creator. And I gave a good deal to someone. They went out of there. Corey, I think you probably remember the 45 RPMs that had records and books and all sorts of fun things like that in them.
Power Comics.
Yeah. I had a Batman themes and Superman song one that was allegedly dated from 1966. And it was still shrink wrap, so I couldn't open it up and take pictures of it. And some guy sent me a note saying, would you take this? I said, why, yes, I will. From Dana Collection, I sold the collected works of Filler Bunny, which was a slave labor published, I think it was Jonan Vasquez. Whoa, very, very unique humor. Dark, funny, inappropriate. I think that was last week. The Emma Frost Ultimate Collection. Nope, gone, forget about it. So if you're interested, though, like I said, I've spent most of the weekend. I've got some of these sundry items up. I also have a lot of miniseries, because, and some of them I'll be talking about because they didn't make the cut. So find a decent price, put them on the eBays, and go sell them. Oh, wait a minute. I spoke too fast. Even as we're speaking, I sold something. You see how fast things are going? If you had your eye on dun, 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 Fantasy Masterpiece number 14, Volume 2. That was the Silver Surfer versus Spider-Man reprint, and it also had a Warlock reprint in the back of it. This is back in 81. Of course, that particular book, I believe, reprints the last actual Silver Surfer comic. Isn't that the one where he fights Spider-Man and he freaks out at the end? No more! World's gonna have it, of course.
Actually, yeah, that was Kirby. Spider-Man was not in that issue. It was in the Marvel Universe anthology series where they wrapped that story up and brought Spider-Man into it because, Silver Surfer's not selling real well, but if we put Spider-Man in, maybe we'll get the Spider-Man fans. But it was a cliffhanger because what it was supposed to be, the Silver Surfer sales weren't great. And I think a lot of it was because it was a double-sized comic. You know, it was a 25-cent comic. And then by the time it went down to regular size, it was already too late. So what Stan did, he brought in Jack Kirby for the last issue and said, "Hey, we got to save this book." So Jack, you know, made it more action-packed, ended on a cliffhanger. But by then, by the time it was time to do the next issue, the book was canceled due to poor sales, and Stan didn't want anybody else to use the Surfer. So you would have to get special permission from Stan to use him, which is why he's not in the Defenders very long.
Yeah.
But even Stan never wrapped up that cliffhanger.
Well, he calmed down.
The Surfer was sick to death of humans, and from now on, it's the Surfer Unleashed, and then no mention of it in his next.
I think the next time we saw Surfer, wasn't he in the Antarctic? And they had polar bears and penguins and everything around, and they were like, yeah, we know there were no polar bears in the Antarctic, but they look so cute, and whoever drew them did such a great job.
Well, let's take a look, because it was in the Defenders. And I have.
Well, while you're looking that up, the Warlock story was the strange death of Adam Warlock. So in Fantasy Masterpieces, they were reprinting everything, and I picked this had to come from my original collection because I was just I liked the reprints. I kept the ones where it was superhero versus superhero, and
I found
Spider-Man
it.
Cool.
Silver Surfer's just kind of wandering around over the ocean, and Submariner says, Silver Surfer, sentinel who rides upon the roof of the world, the Submariner bids you halt, and they fight.
They fight.
Because that's what Marvel heroes did back then. The first time they meet, they have to fight.
Let's see what other goodies. Corey, did you ever read Wolverine Last Stand of the Silver Surfer from 2010 one-shot?
I don't think so.
I don't recall if I did either. Let's see, Jason Aaron wrote it. But Silver Surfer got better. So I waffle between buying Marvel one-shots and not because I like having a done-in-one, but I also then it's like, now what do I do with it? You know, they're not quite a comic. Not quite a book. Let's see what other goodies sold. A couple of variant covers from Rom Micronauts. That was IDW 2017 crossover. X-Men the Movie Toys R Us Silver Foil Edition with Hugh Jackman and the photo cover. I sold a Deathmate preview. Do you remember the Deathmate preview, where it came from, Corey?
Wasn't that from Wizard?
Nope.
Oh.
Advanced Comics.
Oh, okay.
It was just a little newspaper thing where Solar and Prophet went after, I can't remember the name of the woman who caused Unity. I might have to go back and reread that. Not Deathmate, Unity. Have you ever heard of Order of the Stick?
Yes.
You have?
Yes, it's Dangerous Dan Moore loves that. Loves that book.
Oh, cool. I'd never heard of it before. And Dana dropped off like the first, whatever all the volumes were. I'm just reading the back cover. Order the Stick tells the epic two-dimensional tale of comedy and adventure as the now moderately competent members of everyone's favorite adventuring party, the Order of the Stick, find themselves on the front line of a battle to decide the fate of a bunch of people who aren't them. So this almost is shades of Knights of the Dinner Table type thing, Penny Arcades, Dork Tower, gamers done in graphic novel form. I don't recall seeing these ever in comic book shops. They probably should be because the book retails at $32.95. It's not what I sold it for because, you know, Dana loved and read these things. So, but I have other copies online. So if you're a fan or you want to jump on board, check it out. K-R-A-Y-Z. And like I say every week, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Tornado drill.
No. Not where I dig up my Lifesavers hard candy sweet storybook. By the way, this year when I went to buy the Christmas candy the day after Christmas, so it's 50% off, they didn't just have the Lifesavers, which sadly now it's not all the different flavors of Lifesavers. It's all the regular five, but they also have the Lifesavers gummies in these.
Sacrilege.
Lifesavers gummies are awesome, but no, it's Freakin' a Geekin' Joe. What are you freaking on?
That they don't make Lifesaver pops anymore. You remember those?
I do not.
They were make a okay sign. It was the size of that with on a stick. So just a giant Lifesaver on a stick, usually the fruit flavored ones. They didn't do the mints and things like that. Oh, by the way, the world's Minnesota's largest candy shop's open. We got to get together, take a trip.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Where somebody did they announce there. It? Because I know
didn't
they lost
see
their
it announced
Facebook
anywhere.
Page.
I just saw somebody said they tagged themselves in that they were there. Well, we talked about the weather. We're Minnesotans. We do that. I'm a little PO'd, and again, we owe an apology to our listeners because we will do a preview show. It should happen next week. I always want to have the preview shows done early because part of the fun we do and part of what I do when I listen to it, especially, you know, doing it with Corey, is you'll hear things that we recommend, and then you get a chance to go to your comic retailer and say, hey, I heard about this. This sounds interesting. Or even better, you'll look it up in your previews because it's kind of an interactive show. And maybe, just maybe, we'll convince you to try one of these books that we recommend. Even if it's just, hey, we're pointing out that here's another, I don't know, pick a property that has it. Here's another My Mother the Car comic book that, if you remember that show, you're way, way too old. However, the books, I still don't understand why, and don't explain it to me, please. The previews didn't ship. Now, normally I take the hit for the team. I will run out to a local comic store and just buy a previews. We get them for a buck through Discount Comic Book Service. When I buy them in the store, they're $4.50. I do that for you. I enjoy doing that for you, the comic listener. No, I enjoy visiting a comic shop because then I'll buy more than just that. But I figured this time, since I had limited time, I would just call around. Nobody in town had an extra previews. The only place that had them that I was aware of was The Source. And what they do is they pile them for people because they have a large number of people that use the previews on a regular basis. And they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because I find it hard to believe that every single person comes in and buys all those previews in a timely manner. That was always a big conundrum I had with Hot Comics, is I had about 30 people buying and using the previews, and sometimes people wouldn't come in and pick them up, and then you have them in their stack and they're like, well, I only want this one, I don't want the previous two previews. Well, I had to pay for those previews, and then I'm kind of stuck with them. So I started a thing where if you place a previews order, you get the next one free, and that worked for some people, but there were still people that were just like, I'll order when I order. And it's like, That's not how it works. This isn't the Sears catalog. You don't sit with it in your lap, and when you decide to open it up and buy something, you got 2-3 weeks to order it, and then you can't. Things are getting a little better. You got final order cutoff, which helps a bit. So even though our shop, or I should say our con, I'll get it out yet, podcast will have the show a little late. You should still be able to go to your comic shop and say, hey, I'd like to order this, I'd like to order that, whatever. Or maybe you're better off and you have the previews and you can call up and tell Corey, hey, this is what I want out of previews other than my regular pull list, and we'll put it on next week's show. But anyways, the comics are late. The preview show is late. I apologize. I regret the error. eBay's changed. I don't know, Corey, if you've been on there. How do you, when you go on to eBay, Corey, how do you look up for something you want?
I actually just won something off eBay yesterday.
Oh. Can you tell us what it is, or are you going to wait for
Yes. I can tell you what it is because it's not on my list. I used to play war games back when I was in high school and college, and I got a hankering for one after reading an article about the rise and fall of the Third Reich game. And I looked all over the place, and it was, you know, supposedly it's still in print, but boy, Amazon didn't have any except collector's editions that were going for hundreds and thousands of dollars. And then I went to eBay and I looked, and most of them were selling for between $75 and $100, and one guy had listed his for $20 with no bids. So I put in, I'll pay up to $30 for it because it said it's complete, gently used, et cetera, et cetera. And I won. I was surprised because when I see a bunch of the same thing going for, you know, 3 or 4 times what I'm bidding, I always think, I'm not going to win, but it'll still be fun to put in a bid. Nope, I won. But I didn't notice much of a difference. So as a casual eBay user, I didn't notice a difference. You as a power user, what is the difference?
Well, the question is when you go to look up something, how do you do it?
I just in the search bar.
Yep.
Sometimes I will even just go to Google and put in what I want and then follow it with the word eBay.
Yeah. And I think eBay figured it out because what it used to be is when you go to the comic books, if you were searching by category, they would have it by, okay, graphic novels. They would have it by family. They would have it by character, by age. Nope. If you go now, it's one category. And matter of fact, let me go in there. So you go and it's collectibles, and then you, from there you can go into comics, and from there you've got, you can still shop by era in that, but everything's under one category, collectible comics, because really there's no reason to divide things up. Because when you look for something, say you want a Action Comics number 57, you just put in Action Comics 57. You might adjust it, go for, well, I want a 9.8 grade, or you might go, give me the lowest grade you got. Maybe you just get bored someday and you just want to look at Golden Age comics. You can do that as well. But most people are very specific with what they want. So when I went in to do my eBaying, I don't, normally it's like, okay, I've got my Wolverine, Last Samurai, I've got a comic books, modern age comics, X-Men, Wolverine. Nope, it's just comic books. So it's a little bit easier. The key is in the specifics. Now I can get very, very detailed with the specifics. It's Wolverine, the title, Last Samurai, issue number. Well, it's a one-shot, put a one. What year was it published? What family? It's an X-Men family. Who published it? So the search engines are kind of taking over big time for eBay, because I think that's how 90% of the people do their shopping. A little different for me, because now I got to get in, and instead of trying to keyword everything, I can just put everything in the specifics. So ideally, when you decide to search for anything in that first bar up, you'll be able to find anything stuff. A little more difficult for me, but hey, you guys are worth it. I have not talked about freaking in a comic book series in a long time. Well, I'm going to. I finally got down and I read Red Sonja and Vampirella Meet Betty and Veronica 1 through 12. And I just had whatever variant cover I picked. I mean, some of them were kind of fun. Like there was one like the old fashioned TV guide. Some like Dan Parent did the cover. I'm just looking. Hack did the cover. There was one where it looked like a record album. Another 45. Another one. Weekly Dynamite News. I did not like this. I was really surprised. I thought for sure with this type of crossover, I would get into it. I just don't know what it was. There's something about it. And again, I'm a minor spoiler warning for those of you who haven't partaken in it. But it's essentially Red Sonja Vampirella show up in Riverdale, run into Betty and Veronica, who are investigating a murder that Red Sonja and Vampirella are investigating. They become friends. There's a few moments, like when Archie sees Red Sonja Vampirella and starts, hey now, and they're like, no,
don't
worry about Archie. This is not his story. Yeah, which I thought was funny. In the course of the story, of course, they figure out who done did it. They end up getting back onto, what's the name of Vampirella's homeworld? Draculina?
Dracula.
I don't know. Something like that. And the story ends because they accidentally end up back in the Hyborian Age. The end? And it's like, well, that's kind of where it ended. And, of course, it could continue. I mean, this thing seemed to go on forever. But when I read it, I was, how do we say it? Borrow, buy, ignore? This was a borrow. And I'm sorry to say I bought it. But it's on the eBay, so if somebody wants it, come get some. There, you knew I'd get it in there somehow. That's pretty much it for me for freaking. Corey, what you freaking on?
I have a list.
Yep. You checking it twice?
There is a series on Vice TV called The Dark Side of the Ring. This is the darker stories of professional wrestling. And it's not. You do not watch this series to make yourself feel great. It sort of wallows in the seedier side of wrestling, as it says, the darker side, the more depressing stuff. But I am a huge Brian Pillman fan. So I thought that I would watch the 2-hour season premiere for the third season, which is the Brian Pillman story. Now, Joe, I don't know if you know this. Do you remember when Brian Pillman passed away in 96?
Didn't he do it in our town?
Yeah, he passed away in Bloomington, and there was a pay-per-view the next night. And this was when WWE was not doing that great. So the group home I worked at, Nutter actually called the venue and said, hey, you know, I run this group home for teenage boys. Is there any way we could get tickets? So we got tickets for the clients, and myself and Scott all went. And we were actually fairly close to the ring. But it was basically it was a practice show for the four-way that they were doing in the pay-per-view the next night. The weird thing was the microphone under the ring went out halfway through the show. So, you know, you could hear people hitting the mat and all that. And then all of a sudden it was like everything went silent for the second half of the show. But that was Brian Pillman's last appearance because he went back to his hotel room and passed away. And I did not know all the stuff about his personal life. I knew about the main reason his WWE run was the way it was because he was in a car accident. They had to fuse his ankle in a walking position. So he wasn't able to wrestle the way he was able to wrestle before the car accident. And he was on painkillers. I did not know all of the other depressing stuff. And by the end of it, I just felt so sad. But I will say that his son, Brian Pillman Jr., this was filmed back when he was just starting, which is weird because he's already become kind of a mid-level guy at AEW. He's in a tag team called the Varsity Blondes, and, you know, Brian Pillman and Stone Cold Steve Austin were the Hollywood Blondes. So he's not doing the loose cannon gimmick like his dad. He's more just, you know, kind of a very athletic wrestler, a lot of high-flying stuff. So I also, last week, watched Blood and Guts on AEW, which was their version of the War Games. You know, it was two rings inside a steel cage. There were a lot of people, including Dave Shearer, who really, really hated the blood. I mean, they thought there was way too much blood, that people bladed themselves when they didn't need to. That's not what upset me the most, because I've been around wrestlers. There are some who think that a match needs that. I am not someone who thinks it needs that, but I'm also not somebody who's going to say that they won't watch it. But what got me was they did chair shots to the head through the match. That immediately pisses me off, because we know what concussions do to the brain. We know that a chair shot to the head is probably going to give you a concussion. It causes, you know, with football and anything, they've got all these concussion protocols, but there's no reason to hit somebody in the head with the chair. It doesn't add anything to the match. It doesn't make it any more dramatic. It just causes injuries that aren't needed. And the other thing, the fans about that match kind of pissed me off, because the end of the match, you had Chris Jericho and MJF battling on the top of the cage. And of course, if somebody's on top of a cage, what has to happen, Joe?
Well, they got to fall 100 feet to the ground and use
your
cement.
That's right. So Jericho had to take the fall off the cage. And I don't mind the fact that, you know, they gimmicked where he was going to fall so that he wouldn't get hurt. Although I did think that they did a pretty piss poor job of making it look realistic, because they had painted these cardboard sheets to look like the metal, you know, the metal with the little indentations in it, so that when he landed on it, it looked hella fake. And there were a couple times where the camera caught him laughing as he was laying there and being attended to by medical personnel. And that was just, you know, both of those were just poor planning by the production people. We shouldn't have seen Jericho laughing after this horrific fall. We shouldn't have seen that the steel floor that he fell on was actually just cardboard. But there were people mad that, oh, he didn't take a real fall. He took a gimmicked fall. Dude, the guy's 50. Even you couldn't get me to, I'm what, 6 years older than him. There is no way in hell you would get me to fall off, even if they had gimmicked where I was going to fall. There's no way I'm going off a 12 to 14 foot high steel cage into a bunch of cardboard boxes. No way in hell. Wrestling should be like Bret Hart said, you have your match, and then afterward, you're able to go to the bar and enjoy a beer afterward. The headshots and the people demanding that he fall on real steel. No, no, stop it. Stop it. You're bad fans. Over on comics, I've been reading some of the DC stuff. And they're doing something that pisses me off to no end. So I'm reading Justice League, The Last Ride. Doesn't say when it takes place. Doesn't say if it's in the current DC universe or not. It's not halfway through till we see that Batman and Superman are mad at each other for some reason over something Batman did. All you needed to do was put somewhere that this is a possible future, or that it's in Elseworlds or whatever. Instead, I'm reading it and I don't realize it's out of continuity until I'm halfway through the book. And they've got a number of these books that are out of continuity, but they don't say anywhere that they're out of continuity. At least Marvel, if they're setting something in an alternate universe, they'll tell you. But DC's putting out these books. We've got some Future State books that are coming out. We've got these books that are not part of the regular DC universe. We've got these that are in the DC universe right now, but who knows? The reason they did Crisis, supposedly, was because people didn't understand the multiple universes. Well, most of us did, because on the first page, they would say, this is Earth 2, where blah, blah, blah. Or Freedom Fighters, this is Earth X. Or the Shazam comics, this is Earth S. Now they're not even doing that. So I'm picking, I'm, DC, you have me wanting to read your books, but then if I don't know if this book is part of the ongoing story or not, I might just throw up my hands and go, well, who cares about the DC universe if they don't? It's another time where DC has done a lot of work to try and bring in new readers and is failing within a month of doing it. And then the last thing I am freaking on, John Paul Leon was an artist who I started following when he worked for Milestone. I was a huge Milestone fan. And John Paul Leon's art, he did Static, was, I'd never seen his work before. It was kind of the first thing he'd done, and it was amazing for a first-time artist. Now, Milestone's coloring process, they had this Milestone 100 where they had 100 hues of color, and like most people, when they got a new toy, they overused it. But then he moved on to doing other stuff. He did a Batman story with Kurt Busiek. He's done all sorts of comics all over. His art is just beautiful. He was a big fan of Alex Toth, and as he worked, he became more like Toth in that he used light source and shadow to eliminate. He was one of these guys who, if I can eliminate every line that I can and still convey what I want to convey, I'll do it. Somebody posted a pinup he did where it's just a one-page pinup he did. And every character, you know, it's a street scene. Every person in that street scene looked different, dressed different, had different body language. His stuff was beautiful. He passed away from cancer about 2 weeks ago. And he's another one of these artists who fans weren't, you know, he was never a hot artist, but artists loved him because they were able to look at his stuff and see just how talented he was and just how good he was. And there were people who worked at the Kubert School where he, you know, basically where he got into comics, who talked about how he was one of those guys who you knew within a couple of weeks that this guy was head and shoulders above the other people in the class, that his understanding of comic art and shadow and how to draw comics was above other people. He was 49 years old, which I'm getting to the point where 49 years old is way too young for somebody to die. He was also a guy who everything he did was something I bought. He was never a hot artist, but if you get a chance, just go to his Wikipedia page, look at the stuff he did, and then go through the back issue bins or trade paperbacks and pick it up. You'll be amazed at just how good his art was. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I don't often talk about books that are coming up in the future because I usually save the previews for it. However, there's one that caught my eye off of ICV2. All of the Marvels by Douglas Walk. A journey to the ends of the biggest story ever told. Essentially, Penguin Press, I wonder where we heard about this, are going to have this book come out on October 5th, so I imagine we have plenty of time to order it. And Douglas Walk read the entire Marvel comics, all 27,000 comics with over 500,000 pages of story, which essentially makes Marvel Comics the longest continuing self-contained work of fiction ever created, and a 60-year trip through American culture. This book will guide readers through this massive narrative, noting cultural aspirations, storytelling modes, progressive visions, painful stereotypes, woeful hackwork, and luminous creativity. And Walk, Run, won an Eisner in 2008 for his reading comics, How Graphic Novels Work and What They Mean, which I believe was that Dark Horse? I don't know, but you can look either one up.
I don't remember.
It's going to be a 384-page hardcover for $28, so I am looking forward to that. And, of course, it's October, probably being August previews, if not sooner. So, again, that's why I don't get all hyped up about books, because now I got to wait half a year for the damn thing. Come on, Douglas, get that sucker out now. Let's see, what else? Oh, I had a geeking day, now that my overdraft thing is all taken care of. And I stopped at a new store. I discovered a new store.
What? Sort of.
Well, what happened was in 2017, we had Triple B Collectibles form. And apparently they opened up a retail store 4 months before the pandemic hit.
Oh, not good.
Nope, not good. But they did have a good online presence. And when I went in, and of course, I forgot her name. I hope she's not listening because I owe her an apology. Oh, thank God it's on the business card, Darlene Bergman. And we talked as I looked at the store. It's a small shop, high ceilings, one of those classic buildings where, you know, storefront on the bottom, place to live on the top. She was just explaining that her husband, Trevor, all of a sudden, oh, by the way, I rented a shop. So you have something you can do since her pandemic job never really came back. It's at 893 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul, Minnesota. They're on Facebook, of course, under Triple B Collectibles. And you probably Google them and find them as well. Mostly sports cards. So if you're a sports card fan, you definitely need to check this out. They had some really cool stuff. Like Mickey Mantle cards and some earlier Twins. Almost every sports property imaginable. They also had XFL, which the new one, which I guess has been tanked. I don't know what happened to it. All I know is they played a few games and the pandemic killed them. I looked around. I did buy 100-page Ultra Pro sheets, the entire sheet, because I used it not only for comic books that I have drawn, but I also use it for magazines and pieces of artwork, you know, because I still have the Supergirl collection, which eventually I'll have to get updated online. I also bought, and this is a case where I think I'm too old for this shit, Topps Finest 2020 WWE cards. Corey, guess how much this 5-card pack is asking for.
$50.
That's pretty much the whole box.
Oh.
The box only had like 5 packs in it, though. $12.50. Now, the deal is that apparently there are like very high. This is almost like it sounds like it's just all chase cards. It's a totally chase card set. So, and of course, you got WWE Superstar Autographs. And apparently a way to get them just by, because it's all random, you could like send in and they can send you a random thing if you win one or not. Now, Corey, I have in my hand my Topps Finest 2020. Should I open it or should I keep it sealed?
Rip it open.
All right, we're going to rip this sucker open. Let's see what I get. It would be sweet if I got an autograph. Oh, there it goes. It's no longer worth $12.50. All right, let's see what I got. It's all foil cards. That's why Rhea Ripley.
Ooh, I like Rhea Ripley.
NXT. That must be a common card.
Rhea Ripley is now the Raw Women's Champion. She won at WrestleMania.
Nikki Cross.
I like Nikki Cross.
SmackDown. That's card number 57. Let's see. What else did I get? Number 49. King. Corbin, sorry.
Yeah, Baron Corbin. Snooze. Yep.
Let's see what else I got. Seth Rollins from 2015.
Ah.
And that is a chase card.
Ooh.
That's back when they say Seth Rollins was the architect of the Shield, betraying his brethren by aligning himself with the Authority. Once that no longer benefited him, Rollins ventured out on his own, occasionally reuniting with the Shield. He shifted again after losing the Universal Championship, becoming the Monday Night Messiah.
Which is a terrible gimmick.
Terrible gimmick. And let's see. That was my chase card. The other one I got is Montez Ford. No autograph card.
I think Montez Ford is gone. I'm going to look.
It could be. I mean, this, remember, these are all from 2020.
Ford.
That was nothing crazier in WWE Universe than to have...
Nope. He's still on WWE. God, they don't use him anymore, though.
Yeah.
He's spending a lot of time in catering. Oh, wait. No. I'm wrong. I'm looking at the wrong guy. He's part of the... what's the name of the tag team? I got to take a look here.
Well, a lot of times by the, you know, toys and...
No, he's still in the mix.
They start coming out and these guys are gone.
He's one of the Street Profits. He comes to the ring with a red Solo cup because he's a party guy.
The other place I stopped at was Dreamer's Vault. We've been down there before. This is the one down in South St. Paul, 207 13th Avenue South. And I just, they have all, what they do with their back issues is they bag and board them and then sell them half price. Well, actually, they just bag them. All their back issues are half price. They don't have anything older. It's mostly newer stuff. And I went down there without really having any idea what I was going to buy. I just figured out, I was looking for a previews and I hadn't called them before. But I picked up a few things. One of them was on your recommendation. I did pick up a copy of Robin number one because you said you actually enjoyed it pretty well. I picked up, again, because Corey recommended it, the Marvel Legends. I got, I think, 3 issues of it. And I guess what it goes into a force, so I'll have to pick that up. I picked up a variant cover of the Marvels because I got it coming in my box, and I was like, you know, I got to read this now because I'm real excited to read this. This is the one that Buzak's doing, right?
Yes.
Yep, there he is. They also had a giveaway, the Hellfire Gala. Apparently, this is the official guide to the Hellfire Trading Company, so I'm looking forward to reading through that. In the back issue mode, I picked up Dog Days of Summer, mostly because Batcow is on the cover. A couple Darth Vaders from the new series because I kind of checked out. And then I found out, oh, these actually have some heat behind them. So I may sell them after I read them. I think you recommended this one too, Corey. Chris Claremont's Anniversary Special.
Yes.
Yeah, had a variant cover on that one. So, and then I picked up something I've never read before from... Top Shelf Gumballs by Erin Nations. I say that because I'm going to segue into things I have read. And some of it includes this type of weird done-in-ones. You know, as I'm going through discount boxes, I pick them up just to give them a shot. Like this first one was I Hate Cartoons Volume 1. Sounds like Volume 10. While I rip this out, this was done by, dun, dun, dun. Come on, where are the credits? I guess it's a kind of an anthology. It came from yumfactory.com. I have no idea if that's a thing anymore because this dates all the way back from 2001. As you go through it, it's basically... like ads for all sorts of fake toys. Like here is the ward off evil spirits with a flare with Kiki, the fashion tiki. And they have a girl holding it as a doll, kissing it. There's pearl diving Kiki. Get a pearl every time. There's Johnny Voodoo, Kiki's vengeful cousin, who has a curse for each day of the week. Octo Stomp, winemaking wonder. Put real grapes into the bathtub, and he stomps them into a delicious wine beverage that kids can drink. Real battery-powered stomping action. Corey, you can almost figure out the weird ads we used to read as kids. you know, Louis the cheese shark blows cheese-scented soap bubbles. Bath time will never be the same after Louis swims into your tub. He's a good shark with bad complexion. Then there were a couple stories and creepy cartoons, the story of Little Dead. Have you seen your spit by Senior Spit Senior? I'm Senior Spit, Salivatic Correspondence, Salivatic Correspondence, hawking up a little infomercial on the mystery that is spit. Did you know that singing in the rain was translated into ancient Egyptian? It means dances with spit. Spit spelled backwards is tips. So be nice for a change. The reward counterintelligence? Put tips in the cup. Swapping spit is liable to federal and state taxes. I mean, this is just insane, fun weirdness. Again, I Hate Cartoons, Volume 1. No idea if there was a Volume 2. Another one I picked up out of the, it was a buck, so what the heck? Never seen it before. It was something called Grand Gesture by Robert Ullman. And let's see, this is from Alternate Comics, and I'm trying to see if there is a website attached. Hard to say. Published in 2003. This was kind of a slice of life type thing. A bunch of guys, a bunch of girls, the relationships, how they're getting together, how it ends up in the end. Apparently, let's see, this is lurid.com, lurid.com. Whether or not he's still doing stuff, I don't know. He also did Signifying Nothing, Atomic Bomb Bikini, and Lunch Hour Comics. Again, these could be websites that are dead, but again, I enjoyed the heck out of just picking this up for a buck out of a bin. Corey, did you ever read Jay Hosler's Cowboy?
No.
That's Cow-Boy. It was in the buyer's guide as a strip, and basically it's just a guy who had the ability to lactate. And so he dressed himself out as a cow. This is one of those humoresque books that's just freaking hilarious. And I'm going to see if I can find... I posted one of it online where the cowboy is trying to defeat the villain. And so what he does is he's got him on his back, the villain on his back, and he's... No, 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 stop! You know, he's letting the spit drip and come back. And until the guy goes, okay, I give. How many, I mean, you need a superhero fight like that. You know what I'm talking about? And if you've ever been either the victim of that, has that ever happened to you, Corey? Did your brother ever put you on the back or your sister? And
no, I was the oldest.
Oh, and then you probably did it to somebody. I see.
No, I didn't, because that's gross.
It is, but it's very effective. Just a hilarious thing. Laughing Ogre Press published this one. No idea if you can find it anywhere. But one of the things I remember, it wasn't in this book, but there was a... I could go on and on, but it's a very funny book. So if you could pick it up and you want some just a little humor in your life. On a different edge of humor, I picked up 3 issues of Gen 13 Bootleg. Numbers 8, 9, and 10. This was Adam Warren doing Grunge, the movie, where Grunge was talking to his girlfriend about how he would do a kung fu movie. Corey, are you a devotee of kung fu type movies?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I got to borrow these to you to read, because you would get a kick out of this, because some of it went way over my head when he starts talking about the techniques that are used. Other parts of it is just silly, because you know Adam Warren can draw a woman in bondage like nobody else. And again, they're just cheap books out of the dollar bins that I picked up somewhere along the line. I'll put those aside. I was going to put them on the eBays, but you know what? Half the fun is borrowing fun books to your friends. Of a mini series from the Archie lineup, I finally read Reggie and Me. Tom DeFalco, Sandy Jarrell. This one dates back from 2007. Reggie's a bit of an ass, but it's told from the perspective of, well, his Datsun dog, you know? And the dog thinks Reggie's quite a hero. So this was kind of a fun series. You should be able to find it. Again, they're not expensive. Or go to eBay's, because although it was fun to read, it's not one I'll probably keep. Kind of a minor geeking and or freaking, because Corey and I, we talk about this every previews. They had such a great universe going, and now it's just stopped. You know, COVID? Or are these guys just making more money on the Riverdale show? I know the answer to that. Let's see. What other goodies? I picked up a copy of Mr. Sulu Grab My Ass and Other Highlights from a Life in Comics, Television, Novels, Films, and Video Games by Peter David. Just picked it up off the Amazons. Trying to find the price of it, but apparently I did just sift it to me. They didn't give me a price. Just I found the cheapest one I could. And I was going to go for a signed one, but I decided, you know, I just want to read it. Because Peter David is a writer of stuff. Again, he could write the freaking phone book, and I would pick it up. While I was out geeking, I saw a library sale and picked up a hardcover copy of Myth Adventures by Robert Lynn Asprin. Am I saying that right? Is that how you pronounce his name? Asprin?
Yes.
This is the actual book, not the comics that who did that? Aardvark and then Apple, which were fun themselves because Phil Folio did the art. And that was a series that I wish would have kept going, but it eventually died. So I got the book. A long, long time ago, I remember winning a drawing at Dreamhaven, and it was like for $100 worth of stuff. And rather than go for comic, I went for all the Myth Adventure books that they had at the time. And during time, they've all disappeared. I don't have any of them, and I don't recall ever reading any of them either. But I have this one now for a buck, and now I can read it. Lest you think I forgot about the Kickstarter, I did finally get a Kickstarter from, let's see, find the paperwork. Bill Tucci from Crusade Fine Arts. And this is a copy of She Hakyo, which is one of those, again, he's just doing it as Kickstarter. I don't know if he'll ever do it published again, because, you know, a lot of these guys, they made their stuff is funded so fast. They're like, why do I want to go through the headache of Diamond or whoever's distributing it when I can just have it be my own headache, work for myself? So I've got the book. It's autographed. I got the photo cover, which is cool. A lot of good swag with it. That's just the beginning. Next up is the She Omnibus Volume 1 hardcover, which is cool. I have the black and white essentials type book, which was fun reading because I read it when I was on one of my deployments, but the ink rubbed off in my fingers. So it'd be nice to get a hardcover of all that stuff. Then he's doing a few more She Sakura, launching this summer. The final chapter, She Return of the Warrior trilogy, will be later. And in 2022, John Broglia and Bill Tucci will do Zombie Sama 2, Dorm of the Dead, as well as She, the Return of the Warrior trilogy omnibus edition. So a lot of big plans there. Some other plans, of course. Dreadstar, he's still going forward. Jim Starlin's working on his own. They're going to print the current one, and then he's working on another book, and they're going to do the omnibus with Peter David's work, the fourth edition, and also have a slipcase. So you can get all three of the omnibus, all four of them in a single slipcase. So, and that I think is probably later this fall, maybe next year. He just sent the word in my email really quick. And we talked about Jeff Smith's Tukey. He funded it in 10 minutes. That's how fast some of these Kickstarter goes with these people. I don't see them ever returning to regular publishing. Regular distribution when they can do it themselves. I mean, Lady Death, Coffin Comics, they have it all figured out. He's working on stretch goals. I don't think he was convinced it would be funded that fast. So, again, that was something I was beefing about last time, but he's going to do it. And so, yeah, just a lot of exciting stuff on Kickstarter, not to mention when they recommend other things. I got to tell you, I might have to just start a separate eBay fund somewhere for Kickstarter, because I just don't have the money to buy everything I want on Kickstarter. So, and you know, Corey and I, we will promote the Kickstarters we like, as well as any creators who want to come on our show and talk about it. Do we got anybody coming up, Corey?
Not yet, no.
Oh, okay. Well, no, the invitation's out there. So, yeah, I'm geeking on all sorts of fun stuff, and I got plenty of good reading coming up. Corey, how about you? What you geeking on?
Let's see. Some announcements of comic-related stuff. Netflix orders Samurai Rabbit series based on Usagi Yojimbo by Stan Sakai. I'm excited about that. I've always been a fan of Usagi Yojimbo. Stan Sakai is a wonderful guy. He also works on Gru. So good news for him that Usagi Yojimbo not only is still going over at IDW, but when your comic gets optioned for a TV show and you own it, it's really heartwarming, because it means that the creator is the one who gets the profits. The creator is the one who can determine how close it is to his work, depending on the contract he signed. And I'm happy about that. Also, very happy about the fact that Mystery Science Theater 3000 will get another season. They beat their Kickstarter, their last Kickstarter goal by over $1 million. So this is not one that will be on Netflix. I never understood why Netflix canceled it when it was already paid for through a Kickstarter, but I don't know the stuff behind the scenes with Netflix anyway. But now they will be creating their own sort of streaming service called the Gizmodo, which is you subscribe and you'll be able to watch stuff there. They'll have live events. They will have a full 12 episode season with 12 shorts, 2 holiday specials. And because they went over $1 million past the final goal they had, they will be working on some extra goodies. Also, they will have at least one episode hosted by Joel himself. They've got all of the people from the seasons 11 and 12, plus some of the people they used on the tour. So very excited we're going to get more Mystery Science Theater 3000. It was a nail biter, because they were like a little over $1 million short 24 hours before the end. You know, they'd already, they had their initial goal, which was, we're going to bring it back. But each million after that was more episodes. So for a while it looked like, we're only going to get 9 episodes. But nope, they got that last million. We're getting 12. We also had the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival virtually. It was on HBO Max and TCM. I watched a few of the things they had. They had a 2-hour special on Tex Avery. Tex Avery's a guy who I love his cartoons, but I knew literally nothing about him. They had an hour-long documentary and then played an hour of his MGM cartoons. I had no idea that Tex Avery was so important in creating many of the initial Warner Brothers characters like Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam, et cetera, et cetera. And but that's not what I loved the most. What I loved the most was they had a table read. Now, Joe, do you know what a table read is?
That's where they sit around and they just read the scripts.
Yes.
Get a feel for how the flow goes and how the tone goes.
They did a table read with comedians for Plan 9 from Outer Space, with Lorraine Newman reading the stage direction. And she was phenomenal. Just deadpan, would read the stage direction and then comment on it. Just utterly deadpan. Lorraine Newman, probably about the only person from the original Saturday Night Live still working all the time because she does tons and tons and tons of voiceover work, which I did not know until Mark Evanier talked about how close friends he was with her while doing a panel on people who do, you know, cartoon voices. And she talked about how she transitioned into cartoon voices in the early 90s and has been working steadily ever since. And it's one of those where you don't really recognize her voice because she's so good at creating characters. And then right after the table read, they showed on Turner Classic Movies, Plan 9 from Outer Space. And I am what everybody's got that movie where when you're flipping through channels, if you see the movie, you're going to sit and watch it. I have so much love for Plan 9 from Outer Space. It's an utterly incompetent first draft of a movie by a guy who read pulp magazines and crappy science fiction novels and just threw it all into his poorly put together movie that he had no money for. And I remember when they put out the book, The 50 Worst Films of All Time, it was number one. I remember as a kid, they would show it on the local TV horror movie night about every 3-4 months because it was public domain. They could show it for free. It's incompetent. It makes no sense if you try to follow the story. The acting is abysmal, but is one of the most entertaining films I've ever watched in my life. And every time I watch it, it makes me happy. So, yes, I watched I watched Plan 9 from Outer Space. I have seen where Rift Tracks riffed Plan 9 from Outer Space, and it's unriffable. The jokes they made are so obvious that you don't even laugh because the movie itself is so bizarrely, wonderfully entertaining. You don't need commentary for it. You really don't. Marvel has been announcing tons and tons and tons of omnibus reprints, including one that has been out of print for over a decade, and that is the Uncanny X-Men Volume 1 is finally getting a reprint. That's one that was going for upwards of $1,000 in places. Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus Number 1 is getting a reprint. The Doctor Strange Omnibus Number 1 is getting a reprint. So if there are any omnibuses you've missed out on, just kind of wait a couple of months, and they'll probably announce that they're reprinting it.
Omnibus!
Except for Devil Dinosaur.
And I don't think they'll ever do.
I don't think they'll ever reprint that as a omnibus because it was only 9 issues and they've reprinted as trade paperback. And it was easily the smallest and thinnest of the omnibuses. But that made me happy. Comics I've read, I'm still reading The Defenders. I'm now up to the Avengers Defenders War in the omnibus. And that, so much fun because it's just, you know, who cares why they're fighting? Who's going to win? Hulk versus Thor. Who's going to win? Hawkeye versus the Vision. Who's going to win? Iron Man versus the Submariner. You know, it's who cares? It's all right. These guys are going to fight. It made me feel 12 years old again, because when you're 12 years old, you do always argue who would beat who. Joe, now, when you were a kid, who did you think was stronger, Hulk or Thor?
I didn't actually think of that because Hulk was strongest there is.
Yep. That's what I always thought. Yeah, Thor is incredibly strong. But if Hulk's losing, he just gets madder and madder and madder and madder until he finally is strong enough to beat.
Well, I always figured Hulk would eventually stroke out. You know, there's no way that blood pressure could keep going until he's like, argh! But.
And lastly, I am reading a couple of the Visionary books that I bought during one of our excursions out into the world. And it's the George Perez Fantastic Four Visionaries, Volume 1 and 2. Really good books because it reprints most of the stories by George Perez on Fantastic Four, except for the ones where he didn't draw the conclusion If it's a continued story where somebody else drew the second or third or fifth part, they don't have the continued story in there. I was reading along, and when you think Fantastic Four, especially in the 70s, you think, oh, Joe Sinnott inked. Because Joe Sinnott inked back during the 60s through the 70s until John Byrne took over, and he kind of had Joe Sinnott fired because he wanted to ink it himself. Thankfully, Joe Sinnott was able to find work because he's the best inker during that time period. But there was one where Joe Sinnott didn't ink it, and instead Vince Coletta inked it. And I swear you could look at that and not know that George Perez drew it. One of the things George Perez is known for is debris. If somebody got slammed into a building, he would draw five times the debris that there should be because he felt it was more dramatic. Not when Vince Coletta inked it. Nope. Yeah, he went through a building and there's a couple of bricks. But it's George Perez and Roy Thomas, and then George Perez and Len Wein. And I really wish he would have, he came back to the Avengers. He came back to all these series. I really wish he would have come back to the Fantastic Four and did like a 1 or 2 year run. Because, boy, he was so good on that book. He infused it with that Kirby dynamics while also having the very trademark George Perez with his, the way he made each character look different and individual. And Roy Thomas was just firing on all cylinders, pulling out stuff from the more obscure parts of the Marvel Universe to throw into the story. I think I've told the story in the past where Roy Thomas was building up to this huge climax to his second run on the Fantastic Four, but then he moved out to L.A. And Len Wein's story, Len Wein was taking over afterward where everything had all wrapped up from Roy's story, and Roy said, I'm not going to be able to make the deadline, and he doesn't remember anything other than he was moving, but that story that started in Fantastic Four 171 that went through the Impossible Man getting hooked on television and the Reed Richards from Counter-Earth and all this other stuff happening. And then Roy's not going to be able to finish it. So Bill Mantlo was told, okay, you got to wrap everything up and have it right here by the end of this issue because Len's already written his first issue. the chaos of 70s Marvel Comics. So much fun. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us ramble on about funny books, and funny books pretty much nonstop for almost 2 hours.
Ramble on!
Joe did a half hour geeking.
I know. I had a lot to geek about. Sometimes I get repressed.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Why was Spider-Man found sleeping on the roof of an old rundown power station? No
I don't
power,
know.
No responsibility. That's a terrible comeback, Corey. You know why Spider-Man's so good at comebacks? Because with great power comes great responsibility. All right, hit my music.
Hey, yo! Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Done, bitches!